Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I have a very, very interesting personality, a chocolate guru from India, Mr. L. Nithin Chordia. Nithin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ashutosh. Morning. Thanks a lot for this opportunity to bring me on.
Thank you. Nithin is India's first certified chocolate taster. He's the co-founder of Coco Shala and Coco Trait, and he consults in sustainability, zero waste, and the circular economy. So Nithin, let's first talk about chocolates. What goes into becoming a certified chocolate taster?
So just like wine and coffee, you know, though both are more explored than cacao and chocolate perhaps, but just like how wine and coffee follows a very formal education and a training methodology. We do have the similar certification for chocolate and cacao, and is basically being offered by the International Institute of Chocolate Tasting, which is the IICCT based in London. Almost a similar format, just like wine and coffee training.
Okay. And how long is this program for?
So it's three levels, and the first level really is, you know, for starters. So it's a day's orientation. The level two gets more chocolate focused and more serious, of course. That's about 3 days classroom. And then the level three is perhaps the most interesting, which is a 7 day on farm program.
Okay.
So that's when we spend time at the farm and, you know, we kind of understand how the farm to the fork happens.
And which farm did you train in?
So we've trained in farms in India.
Okay.
But otherwise, usually with the institute, because I'm also a partner to the institute in India.
Okay.
So usually it's in Peru.
Wow. Yes. So obviously, you know, if there is a certification to become a chocolate taster, there must be many different types of tastes of chocolate.
Right.
So help us understand what are the type of tastes and how many tastes is the average consumer really acquainted with?
Sure. So just like what, you know, with anything with food, there's sweet, there's bitter, there's salt, there's sour, and then there's umami, which is perhaps known by Indians, but not understood enough. Right. So similar thing is with chocolate. However, I must say that most common consumers, I mean, an average consumer in India would know sweet, bitter, and salt, to an extent sour. But then umami is something that a normal average Indian chocolate consumer doesn't kind of come up with very often.
Wow. Very interesting. And are we in India large growers of the beans?
No, so only the south of the country, the four southern states actually grow cacao. And it's less than 1% of the world's production. And it's less than 5% of what we need anyways. So net, we will be, you know, an importer of cacao. But that's also an opportunity because the land under cultivation hasn't yet been kind of explored enough. So there's potential to cultivate more.
Wow. Since you said that there are demand is up to 5% and we only grow 1%, what is preventing increase in the bean production, and what are some of the challenges?
This is a great question, Sutosh. There are a couple of factors, variables, I would say. One is the popularity of palm oil is eating up into the land, which could have been used for cacao cultivation.
Okay.
So I see that as a threat, very clear threat, and that's preventing growth in a way.
I see.
And the second, I think, obvious, reason, and I think this applies for every crop or commodity grown in India, is the second generation doesn't feel attached enough. Right. So that we see the impact of that over the last 10, 15 years has been very clear, where when we visit farmers, it's the farmer, the older experienced gentleman, you know, kind of toiling, and their sons are nowhere around. I mean, they're doing very well for themselves otherwise, but not in the farming sector.
Very interesting. And you're saying that, you know, the palm oil is eating into the bean production, the cacao bean production. Is it because it's not lucrative enough or doesn't give enough remuneration? Because for the average person, someone who grows chocolate beans or cacao beans should be making a lot of money.
Right. So traditionally, it has been an intercrop. which means that there was always coconut growing and cacao was always the secondary crop, right? Mm. So from an income standpoint, it wasn't much to worry about. Mm-hmm. But clearly palm oil is more lucrative.
Mm.
And it's strange because it's more lucrative than coconut and cacao combined.
Mm.
And easier to grow, less maintenance. So if you put the variable of your second generation not being around, mm. The farmer naturally is gravitated towards growing palm and having it easy towards mm. the end stages of his career or of his life.
Mm. And how are you making a difference in increasing the production?
This is a great question. It's very close to my heart. And this has been our effort for the last 5 years in India with Indian cacao farmers is we help them understand the value of their produce.
Mm.
So today they're in kind of a monopolistic buying economy where, the farmer has only one or two buyers to sell to, right? So what we're doing now is we're helping the farmer understand the value of his product, not just understand, of course, but also increasing the value of his product by implementing post-harvesting protocols and so that he's able to get a better price for his produce.
Okay.
And of course, the good news is that, all of this produce can also be sold in India.
Mm.
Once the farmer makes the effort, increases the value of his produce, there are Indian bean-to-bar chocolate makers willing, already buying, products from them, the beans from them. So we do a lot, whether it's Kerala, whether it is Andhra, whether it is Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, of course. We've done a lot to help farmers, at a price that is acceptable to them, help them increase the value of their product.
Wow. So I was reading an article somewhere which said that there is a shortage of the beans in the world.
Right.
First, tell me, is this correct? And no. Second is that what will be the impact on finished products?
Right. Ashutosh, this happens with every commodity or agricultural produce that grows on land, right?
Mm-hmm.
There will be cycles, there will be certain years which will be better than the other. What the media has done, and they love to write about, chocolate and cacao overall.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is they've taken up one particular year and in one country in Africa, and kind of extrapolated stuff that, if this happens, that will happen. And and those numbers actually are more TRP related, I think, than a real scare.
Okay.
And there are two other things. The fact is, if this happens to wheat or rice, maybe enough people won't talk about it. And also when it's cacao and chocolate, as I said, it's more interesting for readers. I think that it's a function of that more than anything else.
Mm. So, there is a lot of effort being made by many organizations supported by various state governments to introduce cash crops for increasing the money that farmers get in their hands. Is the cacao bean something similar that can be added in?
Yes. The beauty of cacao bean is, whether it's multi-cropping, which is under a coconut tree, or even today, when farmers, more progressive farmers are moving towards vertical farming, where in one piece of land, they will have four or five crops or products growing. Cocoa fits in very, very well. It's something which is, I think, a huge potential going forward.
Mm. Mm. And, since you're also in sustainability and the circular economy, are there any kind of biodiversity challenges that exist with the cacao beans?
No, in fact, the more biodiverse there is from an income standpoint for the farmer, it's always good news.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, biodiversity within the farm helps lock moisture and that helps the cocoa crop anyways.
Mm.
So from even a technical perspective, there is a certain level of advantage.
Mm.
But there's a myth, Ashutosh, which I'd like to point out. A lot of people think that, if there is cacao growing next to a banana tree, for instance, or a coconut tree, it would have an influence of those flavors into banana.
Mm.
That's just not true.
Correct.
But there are other financial and technical benefits to grow along, with other
crops. Sure. So now let's talk about, chocolates as a finished product. I don't think there would be anybody in the world who doesn't love chocolates. Maybe that's too strong a statement I make. But my first question to you is that, unlike tea and coffee, why hasn't drinking chocolate become a popular beverage?
Right. So this is what it may feel like, Asutosh, or seem like. But the fact is, you know, if you, I'm just going to take some names. If you take drinks like Boost or Bonvita, these are chocolate-based drinking chocolates, right? It's just targeted towards the children in maybe perhaps a little misleading way, but that's the set of people, you know, the younger generation is who drinks drinking chocolate in India, as far as India is concerned. But if you look at overseas, drinking chocolate is a much more serious drink.
Correct.
Right. And it substitutes tea and coffee on many occasions, on really many occasions. And that hasn't got very popular in India for two very practical reasons. One is the temperature. You know, excepting if you're in a Delhi for the 3 years of, 3 months of winter, it's too hot most of the other places. And a drinking chocolate is more enjoyed when it's cooler, when you know, the ambient, the temperatures are more conducive. The other thing is the availability of pure chocolate. Unfortunately, what India consumes as chocolate, and you know, it's about 97 or 96% of India consumes an alternate to chocolate, actually. And it's called, called compound. And to be honest, even you or me consume that when we are out traveling, when we have a piece of cake or when you have a brownie, for instance. 96%, 97% of that chocolate is not chocolate.
Okay.
Yes, it's reconstituted product. And even as per FSSAI, and technically, it cannot be called chocolate. It's called compound.
So you mean that the chocolate cake that I enjoy having is not really chocolate cake, it's a compound cake?
Well, Asutosh, if it's you, then you might be dining at a five-star hotel and maybe you're enjoying the right stuff.
I'm just asking one. I'm not me, I mean, but...
Yes, you're right. You're right. Most people do not enjoy pure chocolate or even real chocolate in that so-called chocolate desserts or chocolate products.
So this is some kind of flavoring that is being added, is it?
Actually, it's the fat, you know, and a lot of people ask us what business you're in. I think twice and I say, listen, I shouldn't be saying chocolate business. We're actually in the fat processing business. It happens to be chocolate as the likely flavor, you know. So what they do is they take out the good fat, which is cocoa butter, and sells at a premium. And they substitute it with, you know, vanaspati, dalda, palm oil, all of these activities happen as a substitute to the premium ingredient.
Amazing.
So that's what most of us unfortunately consume.
Amazing. One more question before I move to the next segment. Chocolates are traditionally seen as a luxury product for most people. Given the change in the demographic profile of our country, is consumption of chocolate beginning to change?
The consumption of chocolate can only go one way, Asutosh, and that is up north. You know, there is never, ever in humanity going to be a situation where chocolate consumption has either reduced or even plateaued. You know, I don't see that in the near seeable future for sure. Right. So, but answering your question specifically, chocolate is a premium product if it is pure chocolate in the first place, or if it's real chocolate in the first place. And it will have to continue to be that way because the basic ingredient used is very expensive, or at least it's premium. So by substituting that ingredient, you can make cheaper chocolate. And coincidentally, the chocolates, the pricing of those chocolates are actually going only southward, you know, because mass production, more demand. So then those prices are going down. But very logically and naturally, pure chocolate prices will continue to rise. And hence, answering your question, chocolate will continue to remain a premium product if it is a real chocolate.
Amazing. But you know, Nitin, one thing is not, I can't reconcile in my mind. A few minutes ago, you were telling me that the chocolate farmer is not able to get the kind of value from the crop that the farmer is growing. And now I'm hearing you say that it's a premium product, which is not easily available. Where is the disconnect? Or does it all be taken away by large companies and middlemen?
You bought the two things beautifully, Asutosh. And the connecting part there is the post-harvest investments that the farmer has to do to improve his produce.
Okay.
So today, he is unfortunately bought out by the middleman who will wait for his chance, you know, who will wait for his delay of a month or two to ensure that he picks up the product at the lowest price possible. Wow. And that's detrimental to the farmer. But if the farmer starts investing in improving the quality of his product, then he's much more, you know, kind of relevant to the audience that will pay him higher. And the disconnect very clearly is that the farmer has not yet traditionally invested in improving his post-harvest practices in India.
Wow, amazing. So now let's move to the education place, the suggestion is Coco Shala. Is it Coco Shala or a Cacao Shala?
Cocoa Shala.
Cocoa Shala. Okay, Cocoa Shala. Thank you. So tell me a little bit about this initiative.
Sure. So this started about 7-8 years ago, Ashutosh. Yeah. And this was, I don't know if you remember, but I used to be associated with a company that I love, which I really respect, called KSA Technopack.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I got exposed. I'm talking 2005 and 6 now.
Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I got exposed to, a project which we did, a project very dear to our hearts, which is the Nature's Basket.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process, we realized the reason why certain management consulting projects fail
mm-hmm.
and certain projects, kind of are successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a leap out of that and I realized that in order for me to make a space for myself mm-hmm. in this industry, I need to be offering relevant consulting advice to our clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to bring them to the same page before I sign up for a project.
Mm.
To me, my academy, which is Coco Shala, does exactly that. So when there's a new client, and a lot of my clients actually for consulting come in through Coco Shala, the prerequisite is that if they need to hire me, they need to be doing a 4-day program and it's a paid program at the institute.
Okay.
So once they do the four days paid program, we are at the same level. And then we're talking the same language.
Hmm.
And I've seen the benefits of that very, very clearly. The failure rates reduce dramatically. And of course, as a result of that, success rates, go up. So that's my playing field to also educate entrepreneurs who later on most normally tend to become clients of mine for my consulting advice that I give for setting up chocolate units.
Wow. So at Coco Shala, you are also consulting in just cocoa or sustainability, circular farming, zero waste, and everything else also?
Right. So, while from the outside, it may seem like two different things, but cacao by nature is circular in economy. I mean, a circular nature, it has a zero waste cycle and all of those good things, and even sustainability, for instance, except the fact that it consumes a lot of water.
Correct.
Everything else around it is very sustainable.
Hmm.
So it's almost the same set of things when we talk about cacao, So even if you don't specify sustainability, otherwise, it's always you're going to be in that plan of developing cacao.
Hmm.
But yes, I've paid specific attention towards sustainability, zero waste and circular economy and just bought it up in the front. So all of this used to happen at the back end of the cocoa farm.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've translated that to the front-facing, consumer-facing product
mm-hmm.
so that the consumer can see it, appreciate, and buy a chocolate that is also sustainable while he's consuming it,
wow.
not just while the cocoa beans were grown.
Wow. And you also say that your school helps discover chocolate and beyond. What is this and beyond?
So and beyond is exactly what we spoke about, is sustainability. So when there's a chocolate entrepreneur coming over to our institute, of course, we teach chocolate making, we teach them chocolate appreciation, all of that. But then, there is an element of sustainability that needs to be embedded into a new entrepreneur, right? Mm. And sustainability doesn't always only mean, the environment or the planet. It also means that a business has to be continuous, right? So continuity is part of sustainability there.
Mm.
So we teach them this entire thing, which is more than what a normal chocolate school perhaps would want to focus on.
Mm.
And that's the, I think, differentiator as well when people come over to learn from us.
Wow. So I'm going to now move to the last segment of our conversation, which is about, again, I'm sorry if I get the pronunciation wrong, cocoa trait or cacao trait, the virtual tasting club.
Right.
Tell me about this venture.
So this has played a very interesting role in my life. I started this off in 2016, of course, when we didn't have Zoom and GMeet and Corona didn't, of course, happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it fell pretty flat on my face, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I was maybe ahead of time where I thought that people would, for the love of chocolate, get online. Though Facebook and other mediums were very, very popular even back then,
mm-hmm.
but it was a club that we set up and 4 metro cities typically, where we thought we'll get enough chocolate lovers, together and host events. Now, all of that actually happened,
mm-hmm.
But it was not, it was just a virtual club to come together, but the events all happened offline.
Mm.
Right? Now, if you fast forward to Corona, from the beginning of last year, for instance, which is mm-hmm. close to about 18 months now, mm-hmm. The entire club, which was kind of dormant earlier on,
mm-hmm.
has now helped us host about 120 virtual sessions.
Wow.
And, you know, so I don't know, it was probably meant to be that way.
Mm.
I was meant to at least initiate it in 2016. And mm. maybe the fruits of it were supposed to come with Corona, which is unfortunate, but it came along with Corona.
And what do you cover in these sessions?
So this is very interesting. We also do a lot of corporate engagements apart from just consumer engagements. Mm. And we ship out a box of chocolates and all of us for 1.5 hours taste chocolate together.
Wow.
So it's about chocolate appreciation. Just like wine appreciation.
Mm.
I believe I'm very fortunate that I'm in the chocolate space because chocolates can be shipped out, unlike wine, very, very easily.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen in the last 18 months, it has reached pin codes which I have, and cities which I've never, ever even heard of, which is quite embarrassing. But so many smaller towns in Northeast or in Rajasthan or down south, you know, these are places which are serviced by India Post.
Mm.
And through the lockdown, we were able to reach out these chocolates to them. And then we all get together as a team, whether it's a public event or a corporate event at a particular time, and we go through chocolates. So we're talking chocolates for 90 minutes.
Wow.
And clearly, I'd never get tired of it.
Mm. You know, it's so incredible. But whenever you host your next one, please do count me in.
Absolutely.
Enroll me. And my question to you from this is that you said you ship out chocolates and then you go through 90 minutes of tasting. From where are you procuring all these different types of chocolates?
Great question. We actually take part in I'm heading back a little bit now. We take part in a show called Chocoa, which happens in Amsterdam every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been doing this for a very long time, from 2015 onwards,
mm-hmm.
where we basically set up a stall for our institute.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a lot of our students are from overseas, and that's our marketing investment, if you call it so.
Correct.
And that's really the only investment we do for marketing our institute.
Mm-hmm.
So we set up this stall every year. And in 2018, we heard a voice very clearly from people who were visiting us saying, listen, can you teach us how to make sustainable chocolates?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a trigger for us. And we said, listen, yes, of course, we will teach you, but we will also own a chocolate brand of ourselves
mm-hmm.
called Cocoa Trade. And this starts with a K
mm-hmm.
Because we had to get it registered as a product.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, we have 1 year, we will come back next year. And that's exactly what we did. We came back next year to the show and we had a set of the world's most sustainable chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fortunate enough, the ambassador of India to Netherlands heard our story and he agreed to come to the stall and, you know, inaugurate it.
Wow.
So that was quite a good credibility to us. Also because you're in the tiger's mouth, right? So you're in Amsterdam talking about Indian chocolates and then getting media publicity there was, I think, quite a high point.
Mm-hmm.
And answering your question, that brand which we developed, we told ourselves that we will build a brand in spite of a lot of our students actually building up their own brands, you know, in India.
Mm-hmm.
We said we'll build up a brand and only make chocolates which others don't want to make.
Okay.
Right. So in my earlier sessions, I used to get chocolates from various bean to bar makers across the country and kind of, you know, move along with them, right? That was the intention. But in the recent past, we've been focusing on this brand because it's more sustainable. And this brand is owned by my wife and she does most of the work there. So I pick up chocolates from that brand and pack it in a box and ship out because a lot of people also value sustainability during these times, you know, so it kind of fits in very well.
Fascinating. So my last question to you now is, for our viewers and listeners, tell us which are some of the major coffee growing regions of the world, which are some of the major chocolate consuming regions of the world, and in which countries are really working on the biggest value add between the producer and the consumer.
Great. And I'm sure you meant cacao beans, right? Not coffee, but
cacao beans. So my apologies, not coffee. Yeah.
No worries. So, and by the way, a lot of people actually mistake cacao and coffee. I'm sure you've not done it intentionally, but that's really one level of education we have to do to generally people in India, because they've seen a coffee bean, but they've probably never seen a cocoa bean, right? Because it gets made into chocolate.
Correct.
But the answer to your question is, you know, so there is the tropics. across the tropics around the world, you'd find cacao growing.
Okay.
There are still some unexplored territory within the tropics, like Northern Australia and stuff, which is now being explored. But otherwise, it's the tropics that grows the crop. Mm-hmm. So the cocoa beans are the output of this tropical region.
Mm.
But traditionally, 70% or maybe 80% of the cacao is processed into chocolate only in the other side of the world.
I see.
Right? So it's obviously Europe and America being the most largest kind of processors of chocolate. Clearly, there's a difference between where it grows and where it gets processed.
Correct.
Which means that much more carbon emissions, that much more travel of the raw material to get processed. But things are changing there a little bit. So if you look at India now, there are enough small bean to bar makers that are trying to make a difference. And that will only grow in the future. So we see that trade kind of changing a little bit. And even that little bit can have a huge impact.
Yeah.
Right? But answering your last part of the question, the countries that make the most impact to the product itself would be South America.
Okay.
South America does a lot to improve the quality of the beans before they decide to either produce chocolate with it or export it as really, really premium beans.
Very interesting. Nathan, on that note, I mean, thank you for this absolutely incredible conversation. I've learned so much about cacao beans and chocolates today. I probably would never have been able to get so much learning. Thank you for talking to me at such great length at what's happening at the farm, what's happening in the industry, what you are doing in terms of education, you know, with all the courses that you're running in that cocoa trait and cocoa ashala. I look forward to being a part of one of your programs. But thank you again and good luck.
Thanks a lot, Ashutosh. My pleasure being here. And as I said, thanks for calling me up.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.